haven't decided whether or not to tell you what I said to God this morning. I'm probably going to tell you. Let me think about it for a second while the song plays. This is Gold on the Ceiling by the Black Keys. This is my theme song. I'm going to let it play while I think about this. I'm not sure I want to tell you. Okay. All right. I'm going to tell you because I'm honest with you folks, and you need to know that if God hasn't struck me with lightning by now, he's not going to strike anybody. This is going to be a great comfort to you, and this is why I do this. It's ultimately about you, you see. Obviously, yes, it is. Well, I woke up in a bit of a mood this morning. The eon waxes long. And, you know, people are fond of saying, you know, life's too short, you got to do this. Life's too short, you know, eat more cake. Life's too short, you know, eat more peanut M&Ms. Life's too short, just wake up and smell the coffee, whatever. No. Who says life's too short? No one will ever accuse me of saying life's too short. Life is too long. Life is too long not to eat peanut M&Ms. So I woke up in a bit of a mood, and now I have a pretty good relationship with God. I need to preface what I'm about to tell you with this, that God and I are tight. We're close. And he knows how I am, and he humors me. And so I woke up and I said, oh, I get it now. I get it now. You really can't do the snatching away. It's not a time thing like, oh, we're all supposed to wait for it, you know, and it's like you got to wait for the right time. You can't do it. You can't do it. Oh, okay. Oh, no, that's cool. No, if you can't do it, that's fine. I understand. You know, it's hard. Raise all these people on their feet to just snatch them away in the middle of their day at the checkout line in Walmart or in the garden, in the shower, in the bathroom. Nah, yeah, that's tough. I know. Forget about it. No, you can't do it. And I had him going for a second. I had him going. He was like, I got the feeling he was just ready to say, Zender, how dare you? You don't think I can do this? And he was just ready to do it just to prove me wrong. And then he came to his senses like, oh, I get your little trick. All right, you're not going to fool me. That's not going to work on me. So I'm like, dang, I almost had it. I was willing to sacrifice my hind end for you. I was willing to do this for you. That's right. Because I knew, you know, my audacity was going to get me struck by lightning. But if it could hurry on the coming of Christ and get us out of this predicament we're in, namely being in mortal bodies in the middle of the evil eon, eon 3, then I was willing to sacrifice myself for your sake. But, you know, God ended up winking at me because this is a day of grace and he's not now reckoning people's offenses to them. Not even mine. So God was good with it. We're going to have a drink in heaven over this and he's going to remember. Remember that day you tried? Yeah, I'll say, yeah, I remember that day. Yeah, it's going to be all good. God and I are good. Now, I'm going to jump into Hebrews 6:16, but before I do, I have a word for you women out there, and especially the wives. Now, okay, I want you to bless your husbands, or those who don't have husbands, bless the men in your life. You have such power. Do you realize that? Yes, you have such power for good. You are benevolent creatures, all you women are. Again, I'm amazed to be able to share the planet with your tribe. I can't believe I'm on the same planet with you. It's amazing. Now, you know, there's a mistranslation in Genesis, and you're going to read about this when you get my book, Eve Raised. Because part of the curse God placed on Eve was that you shall have increased pain in childbearing, and your husband shall rule over you. That's what the King James says. Your husband shall rule over you. It's like women are like, oh, God, here it comes. I'm going to have pain in childbirth, and this Neanderthal is going to be telling me what to do. But that's a mistranslation, and I bring this out in my book, Eve Raised, which my goal for this book is to raise women's opinion of themselves. There are so many things the Apostle Paul says in his letters that make women think Paul hates them and that they're second-class citizens, but they're actually not second-class citizens, far from it. You know my teaching. Not only are women not second-class citizens, but they're superior beings. So the verse doesn't say he shall rule over you, it's he shall rule in you. There's a superscript I in front of the over in the Concordant version, which means in. Then you go to the Dvar translation and you find the word heart in there. And anyway, I get all into the detail on this in Eve Raised, one of the 10 books I want to publish by the end of the year. Or did I tell him 12? Oh boy, did I tell you 12 books by the end of the year? Well, we'll see. I'm working on it. But it's he shall rule in you, in your heart. In other words, your concern is now going to be for your husband. He is going to be a part of your heart. You are going to care for his well-being. You are going to think about him, what's good for him. And sorry about that, women. Sorry. I'm sorry about this. But now this man is part of your concern. He's your world. He's your life. And I want you to take care of him. And the greatest power you have is sexual power. And you're going to find out about this in the book Shaga. Now, there are a lot of Shaga tamales out there. I know it. Some of them are latent. They have latent Shaga characteristics. Shaga is the Hebrew word in Proverbs 5, translated intoxicated. You women have the capability of intoxicating a man, and I am imploring you to use this amazing power that you have for the benefit of the one God has given you. Because now he is in your heart, isn't he? Darn it, you wish he wasn't, but he is. It's part of the quote-unquote curse. And part of the curse of Adam is he needs you. Your man needs you. And as much as you don't like to admit it, maybe, you need him. And so this amazing power, the power of sex, is to be used in a benevolent manner by you goddesses out there. And so I wanted to pass that along to you because it is an amazing power. It is a God-given power. It's good. It's holy. And it really, it helps men. It's like you have this river, all right? I know I'm going to get to Hebrews 6:16, but picture a river. It's a raging torrent. And yet it's just a pristine scene. You look at it, it's nice, but it's not productive, is it? All right, I'm comparing this to a man. This is an analogy. A man is a raging torrent of testosterone, just like this river. Now, what if you put a turbine on this river or a mill of some kind so that it's generating power now? Like, you know, General Electric started at Niagara Falls. They took the power of Niagara Falls and they used it to drive turbines to make electricity. What I'm suggesting to you very strongly is that you take this amazing testosterone, this 5 quarts of hormone running through your man's body, and steer it for good. Use it for good. You are a benevolent power, and you are to use this not for ill, not for intimidation, not for spite, but for good, to steer your man in right directions. And again, we're going to talk more about this when I publish the book Shaga. Coming up this year, God help me, it's coming up this year. I know I've been talking about this book for a few years. It's not my fault. God has ingeniously curtailed the publication of this book because his timing is perfect. Okay, speaking of timing, that perfect segue into our topic here in Hebrews 6:16. Now, this is a difficult passage. I'm going to read this. You're going to see how awkwardly worded this is, but I'm going to make sense of it for you because that's what I do. I'm going to simplify this mess of words here in Hebrews 6:16 through 20. For humans, it says men there. All right, this is what I'm doing for you, first of all. It says men. For men are swearing by a greater. Okay? Forget it. There's a superscript H, a little tiny H in the Concordant version in front of men, that means humans. And I don't know why. I think A. Enoch was sexist. I really do. Because every time it says humans, he puts men. And that's sexist because we're not talking about the gender of male, we're talking about human beings. So whenever I read scripture, you may hear a different wording for me. It's because I'm transposing this in my mind and I'm telling it to you. It's not men, it's humans. Verse 16, for humans are swearing by a greater, and to them an oath for confirmation is an end of all contradiction. in which God, intending more superabundantly to exhibit to the enjoyers of the allotment of the promise the immutability of his counsel, interposes with an oath that by two immutable matters in which it is impossible for God to lie, we may have a strong consolation. I know this is crazy language. I know. You don't get any of this. That's okay. I'm going to explain it to you. Interposes with an oath that by two immutable matters in which it is impossible for God to lie, listen to this, it's impossible for God to lie, we may have a strong consolation who are fleeing for refuge. Now, this is not only true of the circumcision, but it's true of us. We're fleeing to refuge. Who are we fleeing to? Well, first of all, what are we fleeing from? We're fleeing from the world and all the disappointments and all the things that never work out in this life. We're fleeing from that, and we're fleeing to a promise. We're fleeing to an immutable promise. We want to believe in something. We want to believe that something is sure and firm, and there is something sure and firm, and that is the promises of God. We need to know that the promises of God are sure and firm. And God interposes with an oath. He takes an oath and he promises something, right? In this context, he's promising the Hebrews something. And there's his own law says that by two witnesses a matter is established. By two witnesses. But God has no one against which to promise or with whom to promise. So he has to swear by himself, which is very, very odd because a covenant involves two parties by definition. That's why the new covenant is a figure of speech. Now listen, the old covenant is not a figure of speech, it's literal. Because the old covenant was God saying, I'll do my part, you do your part, saying to Israel. Israel couldn't do her part. So God put Abraham to sleep and he cut the covenant and he swore by himself and with himself while Abraham was asleep and he established the matter. So, how can it be doubted? How can the promise come into question if God is swearing by himself? He interposes with an oath that by two immutable matters in which it is impossible for God to lie, we may have a strong consolation. Not only the Hebrews, but you listening to me today may have a strong consolation who are fleeing for refuge. We're fleeing from the flaky world and laying hold of an expectation God has given us. It's laying before us. But can we trust it? It's been a long time. It's been 2,000 years for the Hebrews since God promised these things. And it's been 2,000 years since he promised it to us through Paul. Where is he? Where's the promise? God is not slack concerning his promises because he swore by himself. And we're fleeing to that. From the world which we can't trust, to lay hold of the expectation lying before us, which we have as an anchor of the soul. God cares for your feelings. The soul speaks of the emotions, the feelings, and we need something to hold on to. We need a promise that's true, that's real. And we need to trust the one who makes the promise, and we can, and that's God. And it's an anchor for our soul. It's secure, verse 19 of Hebrews 6, and confirmed. And entering into the interior, beyond the curtain, we're speaking of the tabernacle here and the temple, where the forerunner, Jesus, entered for our sakes, becoming chief priest according to the order of Melchizedek for the eon. We're going to talk about Melchizedek in detail, but tomorrow I'm going to talk to you about the promises of God, how immutable they are, how sure they are, because he swears by himself. He does not count on any other person. Salvation by a human is futile. That's a verse somewhere in the Bible. Read the whole Bible, you'll find it. I'm not sure where it is. Sorry about that. Salvation by a human is futile. So you don't depend on yourself. You depend on the one who promises. Paul is imploring the Hebrews to grasp onto this fact that it's no longer up to them. It's up to him. And this is a transadministrational truth. It applies to us as well. The promise depends on God. And he is very long-suffering. I'm going to give you some good news tomorrow about how long-suffering he is and how he never forgets, no matter how much time goes by. We forget stuff that happens yesterday. He cannot forget anything he promises to do. That is a consolation to us as we flee from this flaky world into the arms of a dependable God.